And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, our online streaming service. Now, today, as mentioned, we're going to be looking at a fairly unreported issue, some of the extreme difficulties faced by military family members in the United States, and I'm sure a similar situation exists in Canada. And we're going to be speaking today with Melita Arredondo, in particular, as she is the stepmother of Alexander and Brian Arredondo, the wife of Carlos. She has worked with Gold Star Families for Peace and Military Families Speak Out, and she's also a member of Veterans for Peace. So Melita, thanks so much for being on our program today.
Thank you very much.
Our interviews with American military families have always been very important. In fact, we have interviewed members of Gold Star Families for Peace and Military Families Speak Out in their involvement with the steelworkers as part of anti-war campaigns. You know, the truth is we wish we had heard more about your story in Canada. It's not been reported very much. And if you look on the internet, of course, you'll find many powerful images of Melita standing at demonstrations, talking about the cost of war. And it's the cost of war to this family that we're going to be talking about. I think it's unfortunately representative of many other families. And Melita's been opposing the overseas wars. It's been an enormous trial throughout. I think it was certainly difficult being notified about Alexander. I understand Carlos was one of the first to be notified. He received an extended visit from the casualty assistance team. Isn't that the case?
Yes, when the casualty assistance company came to the house, Carlos met them. He was in the front yard of a home we had at that time in Florida painting a fence. And because he's originally from Costa Rica, it did not occur to him when he saw three Marines coming close to him with dress blues that they were here to give him bad news. He actually directed them to the neighbor's house, thinking that they were here to try to recruit somebody.
Wow.
And when they finally explained, no, that they had come to see the homeowners of the house, Carlos said, I own this house. And he said, well, are you Carlos Arredondo? And he responded, yes. And they said that we're here to tell you about the death of your son, Lance Corporal Alexander Arredondo, earlier today. And Carlos heard them but didn't quite comprehend them and left them in the front yard, which is where they told him the information, and went to the back of the house to look for my mother-in-law and said to her in Spanish, they're saying that Alex is dead. And she got very upset and she went out to talk to them, and they didn't really speak Spanish, which I thought was a little strange since this happened in South Florida. One of them managed to communicate with her, and Carlos then came back out and asked them to leave, but they didn't leave. They stayed for about 20, 25 minutes, and somehow Carlos called me to tell me at work that Alex had died, and I went to pieces and I got home as quickly as possible. During the time, Carlos asked them to leave several times, and he kept getting more and more agitated and decided, I don't know if it was a decision really, he reacted by trying to get them out of there and getting a tank of gasoline and a torch that he had. It's a sort of like a fancy lighter. And wanting them to get out of there, and basically entered the van and set the van on fire and himself on fire.
It's so difficult to describe and to talk about and to hear about. I think there's really only a few people that can be counted on to even talk about or tell such a personal story.
Yeah.
In the case of Carlos, you have the situation also, as you mentioned, his family is from Costa Rica, and they don't seem to have much of a military presence there.
There is no army in Costa Rica. It's been outlawed since 1948, I believe.
It's not the same dynamic then as the United States. So it's not a strong part of his family until recently, I would not assume. And also, as you say, seeing such iconic American things as a Marine casualty assistance team coming to one's home was not immediately familiar to him. And I think so the tragedy of it struck him perhaps even later than it would have, and perhaps more strongly.
Yes. And it also, at the same time that the Marines were at the home in Florida, Brian was visiting with his mother in Bangor, Maine. Brian is Alex's younger son. And the casualty assistance team came to the house there, and Brian, having been born and raised in this country, did know why they came to the house, but they refused to tell him. They said they wouldn't tell him unless the mother was there. And they just sort of went out to sit in the van, is my understanding, until his mother showed up. And in the meantime, Brian got it almost as upset as Carlos and started breaking things all around his mom's house and punching walls, and was left in a very unsafe situation with himself. This. When his mother did show up, all he could say, crying and repeating himself, was, "I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And he ended up going for a walk, and as he told his dad, he was basically looking for oncoming traffic so he could kill himself.
It's really now that we fully understand the importance of Brian's reaction to this. And when I think of Carlos's reaction and Brian's reaction, it reminds me in part of what I had heard from Cindy Sheehan when confronted with similar news. She collapsed, in a sense, and there was a sort of a primal scream or howl, that a sense of outrage and disbelief that this can be happening. It's you can't fully accept it then. It's hard to fully accept it now. And in the case of Brian, we know now that it deeply, deeply affected him. And you had mentioned he had been looking or searching for oncoming traffic to walk into. These feelings persisted for, what was it? It was 7 years?
Yes. And Brian had, Brian did end up killing himself by hanging in December of 2011. But he had tried to do the same thing in 2006, the summer of 2006. But the noose was found in his room, and he was forcibly sent to a psychiatric hospital.
Yes. I had been reading about this, and I saw a Time magazine interview, and you were describing the situation. This was prior to December of 2011, and you mentioned even then that there was concern. You had great concern about how Brian was coping with the issue. You said he can't seem to do anything without thinking about Alex. We were very worried about him. So there was this continuing feeling on that, and it relates so closely to what we've learned now about many other military families who've experienced the same thing. When a soldier goes to war, they're not divorced from the rest of the family. They're not divorced from the rest of the country. They're part of a network or a chain. And so when a family member or two family members sometimes or multiple family members are deployed, the family is concerned as soon as they leave, essentially. And studies have been conducted now that talk about a sort of pre-trauma. When family members are deployed, those at home feel stress, they have sweats, they have headaches. They're expecting the worst. So when you toured to discuss these problems, I believe you encountered families who had experienced similar feelings either prior to or after a tragedy.
Yeah, and we still do. There are still, we meet families who may be very happy that their children are, and very proud of their children making this decision to join the armed forces and go through boot camp, etc. And then after that wears off, they realize that they're going to be deployed, or they've gotten their orders to deploy. And I feel a lot of compassion for them, because we've been there. And it's very disorienting. And it's also it's just a very anxious time. It does impact sleep, work. I remember when Alex was deployed, because he was killed on his second deployment, when he was deployed his first time at work, and it was at the beginning of the invasion in Iraq, I had to shut the door of my office, which is where my position was frowned upon, and the reason was people would come and tell me news reports, did you hear this happened in Baghdad, did you hear this happened in Najaf, did you hear about, and I'd be like, please don't do that. You're not making it better.
Yes. In a way, the strain is unprecedented because of the length and duration of the current conflicts. I don't think many people expected that the wars would last from 2002 or 3 until present. And in your position, I understand you're involved in immigrant integration and considerable social work activities that was very busy, very demanding. And many Americans right now, they're facing a situation where their work demands are growing and growing, and they can't stop to think too much about the war unless they have a family member. And then that becomes another source of anxiety on top of all the other problems that people are experiencing right now.
I see that very people are numb right now in the United States to the fact that the war in Afghanistan is still going on. There are people who believe that it's over. It's not. People don't realize that our troops are all over the world and have died in several places other than Iraq and Afghanistan, be they Navy, Air Force, etc. And that former personnel, such as what happened in Libya recently with those killed with the ambassador, the United States ambassador, being killed as well. One of them was from Massachusetts. Carlos went to the funeral last week for Glenn Doherty, who was a Navy SEAL. These careers being involved in these foreign relation positions can be very dangerous and are a sign that we're still at war. The United States is at war, and I'm afraid embarking on formal declared wars may occur soon. I'm very concerned about that.
It is a great concern. Certainly we are moving on that in Canada and having demonstrations about the possibility of expanded wars. It's something we don't want to see, and we need to acknowledge the wars and tragedies that have already taken place. And I think it takes a lot of courage to break through the silence in that there had not been extensive discussion of the difficulties involved for all the families who have soldiers overseas, in addition to the difficulties faced by soldiers and the people living in those war zones. But now there are networks. You have met with military families. There are organizations such as Military Families Speak Out, Veterans for Peace, all sorts of groups now. You have been going to a number of events, and some of these issues, I think, are possibly now easier to talk about. There is growing discontent with a variety of things now, and a lot of things are becoming politically more feasible. And it's forced people, ordinary people who have jobs and families, to get involved in politics or some degree of activism, perhaps against our own will. But now you are meeting more and more people that have been forced into this, in this reality. So do you think that it's possible to continue working with and building organizations where you're able to speak with veterans, families, and speak with the public about the unreported toll of this war?
Well, I think the organizations are that have been doing this work in the peace movement are experiencing difficulty financing and continuing their work, and that is a truth. Part of the reason why Carlos and I do continue is because it's a type of therapy for us, and because there are many other families, for economic reasons or because their children are home, are not speaking as much as they used to. So two of our best friends are Kevin and Joyce Lucy. Their son was deployed at the same time as Alex when the war in Iraq began. And upon his return, he came back very impacted with post-traumatic stress disorder and ended up taking his life in his parents' home. They continue to speak out. But it's a lot there are too few families for all the who really speak out. And what Carlos and I have done is what we do is we will go to an organization called TAPS, Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, and it's a peer support system where there are conferences across the United States. And we don't go there as activists. We go there to try to heal. And that's really important to us, especially now since we've lost Brian as well to suicide. They directly talk about suicide, something that is only being openly talked about in the United States in the past year, especially the suicides among the military.
Yes, indeed. In fact, our website, the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and parts of the Canadian Peace Alliance are now addressing this issue more directly. The fact that people say support the troops, and you have to ask, what do you mean? And for how long? And do you support the families? And so on. And that's a very big question. And the truth is, you're not alone within the United States or in Canada. You've met a number of people involved in other organizations which have experienced financial difficulties. But here in Canada, I know we have done some stellar activism I've seen out of Toronto, British Columbia, parts of Ontario, about the case of the United States war resistors who wish to no longer fight. And we've been very supportive of that cause, and we've been in coordination and contact with the soldiers who have experienced that situation and are part of that movement in the United States. And we've received news about activism by veterans about the war. So I think the activism is changing.
It's evolving.
Yes.
For us, what the big impact that what really impacted a change in the activism is because we got a Democrat in the White House. And it sort of made it unpopular to speak out against the incumbent. But I don't say that doesn't mean people are not speaking out. It's not reported. That's the important part about it. It's not reported on the media. Whereas it was before, if we know Cindy personally, so if Cindy had gone to Chicago, Illinois, and stood in front of Obama's house, she wouldn't have gotten any attention.
Nonetheless, there was a protest. Was it not in Chicago during the summer by veterans? As you pointed out, we're in a situation or a period of transition where it would seem that you lose support at a time when you should be becoming stronger. So when Obama gets in, we know that people voted for him as a rejection of Bush. So you would think that it would be a time in which a lot of the aims of the peace movement would be realized. But instead, as you point out, a lot of support evaporated for the anti-war movement upon Obama's victory. It was assumed that business was taken care of and things would be all right soon, among other things. So as people come to realize that there has not been the amount of change promised, people are turning back to activism. And it may not be activism that's just funded through donations, but it means more and more people who have become unemployed, who have returned from the war, are now going out into the streets and writing letters and coordinating with other groups. So it is a different form of activism.
It's
changing and evolving, as you say.
But the president and Mrs. Obama did something strategically very intelligent, which is they took on the cause of military families when immediately upon taking office. I personally don't feel that much love about it, but a lot of people do. Those who have had their children in Afghanistan, etc., or have lost their children, or their spouses, etc. And he's reached out, the White House has reached out in many different ways. We lost our Alex during the Bush years, so we really didn't get it. It didn't change anything for us. However, having said that, we are very much, I've been trying to bring attention to the fact that Brian died related to the death of his brother.
Yes.
And that family suicide does exist. As related, and the mental health of family members and the complicated grief is true, a reality for many.
Indeed, since Obama's election, it has become somewhat easier to discuss that particular issue, that of the veterans and the military families. And I have noticed a great variety now of news articles, at least until recently, from the United States and Canada on this very subject. So there is a lot more information now in the public domain about this, from the most mainstream sources, from Time magazine, you know, filtering down to little newspapers and columnists. So it's now easier to discuss this and bring attention to the subject. And I think what you need to do now is hold on tight and keep doing what you've been doing, because movements come and go, they change, they evolve, but you're still there, and you're like a spark plug to keep the next segment going, and they can look at you and the work you've done and see that there has been work done on this, and they can be part of it. So I think it's so important what you've done, and I'm just glad we have community radio programs as across the United States and Canada, such as this one, where we can talk honestly without interference about that and get it out to the people that want to hear. So I know this is a difficult thing for you to do, to talk about this issue. It's painful every time, but people have to hear about it. And if it helps us prevent pain and prevent this situation from continuing, then it's worthwhile activity. So I think our listeners recognize that, and we're very appreciative. We were appreciative of Cindy Sheehan and the work that she has done and continues to do, and we're appreciative of all of the military families and the veterans who speak out. So I want to thank you so much for telling us about this, and to keep this up. I know the movements are changing, but we will pay attention to the organizations that we've always followed, from military families speak out to the Gold Star Families for Peace and Veterans for Peace, the work of Colonel Ann Wright on this. That helped draw attention to your particular story as it was published in Canada, and therefore it means it's working, that it's getting out there. So thanks so much for doing this. It's worthwhile speaking with the journalists and the activists on this. It is starting to trickle down to us, so we do appreciate that, and we want to thank you again for being on the program today.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.